It is my great honor and privilege to get to introduce another gentleman who is no stranger to any of us in this room, and that is Daniel J. Cameron, the 51st Attorney General of the Commonwealth of Kentucky. He's the first African-American independently elected to statewide office in Kentucky's history, and the first Republican elected to the Attorney General's office since 1948. Attorney General Cameron leads approximately 200 attorneys in 4 offices across the Commonwealth, and if I'm not mistaken, opened one up in my neck of the woods in northern Kentucky. We're glad to have you. As the Chief Law Enforcement Officer for the Commonwealth, he's committed to defending the laws of the Commonwealth, as he sent Deputy Solicitor General Matt Kuhn to do just last week in the Supreme Court, as you've already heard. He's dedicated to protecting Kentuckians, fighting the drug epidemic, which we've also heard about today, being a voice for the voiceless, including victims of child abuse and human trafficking. As legal counsel to Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, unfortunately now Minority Leader McConnell, he was instrumental in the successful confirmation of several federal judges, including Justice Neil Gorsuch. As I told many of the young lawyers earlier today, if at all possible, it is good to be friends with Senator McConnell. He served as spokesman for the Kentucky Smart on Crime Coalition, and in 2017, the Kentucky Narcotics Officers Association named him Legislative Staffer of the Year. I could give you all of the Attorney General's resume, which you can all easily find on Wikipedia, but I'll simply say this. This is a wonderful man, a dear friend, a great servant to the Commonwealth, and it is our honor and privilege to welcome him to deliver the closing remarks to this year's conference. So, Attorney General, if you don't mind.
Are you honest, sir? Please, thank you. Well, thank you, Phil, for that kind introduction, and I assure you the feeling is mutual when you say a good friend, so thank you for your friendship, and thank you to Speaker Osborne and the House members of our General Assembly for opening up this chamber for us to have this afternoon. I'm sorry I couldn't be here this morning. My wife and I are expecting our first child in January,
Oh, thanks, brother.
Some people clap and others say condolences, so I don't know at this point which one it is. We had our 26-week checkup a few hours ago. Now, I'm happy to report that everything looks good, but I must admit that it's a little strange to start your day talking about birthing classes and then try to think of something profound to say in front of FedSoc members. And I feel certainly just as unprepared now as I did this morning. But nevertheless, it's good to be back together in person with so many like-minded men and women. And let me just say that I know that a lot of folks helped put this program together, but I do want to single out Bob McBride and John Stanton for their efforts they've undertaken in assembling this group. And I don't think it's lost on anyone that this is the 5th year of this statewide conference. That's an important milestone and worth celebrating because it's not easy to keep folks connected, especially through some of the challenging times we've experienced over the last couple of years. But despite all of it, despite the breakdowns in normal engagement, normal meetings, and the spate of conferences that have been postponed or flat out canceled, you've moved forward through it all. That speaks to the commitment of those in this room, but I also think it points to dedication to the principles and ideas of FedSoc, that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of government powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and the duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. In many ways, the events of the last 2 years have tested those principles and have tested the durability of our Constitution. From COVID-19 to a state's ability to defend its laws and its sovereignty, my office has found itself in the middle of these conversations. Last week, as has been already talked about, my Deputy Solicitor General, Matt Kuhn, stood before the 9 justices of the United States Supreme Court and advocated for the ability of this office to continue our defense of House Bill 454, pro-life law that our General Assembly passed with overwhelming bipartisan support in 2018. After House Bill 454 was signed into law by then-Governor Bevin, it was immediately challenged in federal court. Federal District Court judge stopped the law from going into effect, And before the law could be heard at the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals, a little game of musical chairs, if you will, happened and ensued in state government. I moved into the AG's office, and my predecessor became governor. At that time, the governor agreed to hire our office to defend the law at the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals. But when the Sixth Circuit permanently enjoined House Bill 454, the governor's team washed their hands of this case and refused to pursue it any further. Immediately after finding this out, my office moved to intervene so that as we could continue exhausting the appellate avenues in defense of the law. Unfortunately, the Sixth Circuit said no, but we weren't willing to take no for an answer. And of course, last week we had our case heard at the highest court in the land. If we ultimately prevail, the court will be saying that a state has the right to defend itself with an official or representative of its choosing. And regardless of what other agencies or branches of government might decide, here in Kentucky, the Attorney General's office acts and stands as a failsafe to ensure that the Commonwealth's laws can always be defended. And of course, if we are successful, we will have our right to defend House Bill 454 restored. We can go back to the Sixth Circuit and continue advocating in support of this pro-life measure. There's no question that over the last few months, the filing deadlines and moot arguments in preparation for the Supreme Court kept us busy. But I assure you that over the last 2 years, our governor has kept us even busier. And let me just say for the record that whether you were President Trump or now President Biden, Governor Beshear, our county judge executives, or mayors, I understand the responsibility to keep people safe. We don't necessarily need government to tell us how to do that. Tell us how to be more cautious or more considerate of how we interact with one another. At the end of the day, the principle that has been helpful to all of us is one that comes out of the Bible. So be a good neighbor, to love your neighbor as yourself. But my role as Attorney General requires and demands the equally important responsibility to stand up for the constitutional rights of Kentuckians. Because for our Constitution to endure, it must be defended at all times, through all seasons, regardless of how convenient or complicated. In 1788, James Madison spoke to a convention of Virginia delegates gathered together to ratify the Constitution. He said, "I believe there are more instances of the abridgment of the freedom of the people by gradual and silent encroachment of those in power than by sudden and violent usurpations." Whether in times of conflict and crisis or peace and prosperity, we can never take our constitutional rights for granted, especially when the decisions being made by those in positions of authority are devoid of common sense. And while we're on the topic of common sense, I'd be remiss if we didn't acknowledge the strength and judgment of General Colin Powell, who passed away this morning. Among the condolences and obituaries remembering this great American was a comment from President George W. Bush once made about his Secretary of State. It read, "I would say of General Powell what Harry Truman said of General George Marshall. He's a tower of strength and common sense." You all know Powell's storied record. 2 tours in Vietnam, 4-star general, U.S. National Security Advisor, Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, the first Black Secretary of State. Yet despite all these accomplishments, what the President of the United States recognized above all else was his strength and common sense, underscoring the importance of good judgment as an anchor for any position and in any circumstance. Such traits certainly would have come in handy here in Kentucky over the last 24 months. I'll give you a couple of examples of what I mean by that. In the early days of the pandemic, the governor placed unconstitutional restrictions on travel. Under the governor's order, if you lived in northern Kentucky and you loved barbecue, couldn't make the 20-minute trip across the Ohio River into Montgomery Inn Barbecue without having to quarantine when you came back to Kentucky. But you could drive all the way from northern Kentucky to, say, Moonlight Barbecue or Old Hickory in West Kentucky without having to quarantine at all. Now, I'm all for trading in state, and we have some pretty good barbecues, most of you all can attest to, in West Kentucky. But if the concern was increased exposure to COVID, then how is a 20-minute trip across the river any riskier than a 4 or 5 hour drive across the state? You didn't need a law degree or a medical license to know That didn't make sense. And on top of that, it was unconstitutional. So we went into federal court. The court struck it down. The governor ultimately rescinded that order. Around the same time, the governor issued a separate order that prohibited faith-based gatherings, specifically, but allowed factories, shopping malls, retail stores, and grocery outlets to remain open. Later, the governor issued a companion order that closed all organizations that he deemed not life-sustaining. This order listed nearly 20 types of businesses and organizations that he deemed life-sustaining and thus allowed to remain open. Houses of worship were not among them. So what was the result? Well, on any given Sunday morning, you could drive by a church and see a completely empty parking lot. Meanwhile, you could pass by a Home Depot or Lowe's and see parking lots filled with cars and know just as many customers were inside. On one hand, you had churches that are protected by the First Amendment, but they were forced to close. And in the other, you had big box stores that were allowed to stay open. And the governor's orders provided no justification for why some entities could be trusted to take COVID precautions and remain open, while others, including churches, could not. It was the very essence of picking winners and losers. So again, we went into federal court, and from Maryville Baptist to Tabernacle Baptist and Danville Christian, my office filed suits, joined suits, and submitted amicus briefs in support of the free exercise of religion. Now, we won some of those cases and lost others, but in the end, churches reopened in Kentucky. Now, I don't tell these stories to toot my own horn. And in fact, as you know, our office also challenged the premise of whether the governor even had the authority under our emergency power statutes to issue executive orders responding to COVID. We lost that case. The Kentucky Supreme Court ruled against us 7-0. Now, I'm not proud of that fact, and I vigorously disagreed with their decision. But I do think it informed the decision-making of our state legislature. It ultimately set the stage for the General Assembly to change our laws so that more people could be involved in our response to emergencies, including the legislators that sit in this chamber. And when the governor challenged those laws, this time the court ruled 7-0, affirming the right of the legislature to make those changes and solidifying the role as the policymakers in this commonwealth. All of these lawsuits, whether wins or losses, demonstrate the courage of our office's convictions to do what is right by our citizens and our Constitution, regardless of the outcome. As the Sixth Circuit astutely noted, while the law may take periodic naps during a pandemic, courts will not let it sleep through one. From our office's perspective, fealty to the Constitution meant protecting liberty even in the midst of a pandemic. Now, before January 2021, our office only had to be concerned about a lack of common sense being played out at the state level. But now, we see that that same poor judgment has taken root in the White House and in the halls of Congress. Emboldened by this new administration, Congress passed a third round of stimulus, the American Rescue Plan Act, ARPA, unsurprisingly, came with strings attached. The majority party in Congress essentially said that by taking this money, you promise that you won't undertake any tax reforms in future years, and if you do so, our Treasury Secretary will take back the funds. This heavy-handed approach, if accepted, would have been tantamount to the federal government taking over state policy, tax policy, hardly the federalism envisioned by the Constitution. So to help restore the balance of power between states and the federal government, we asked a federal court judge to stop this unconstitutional intrusion into state sovereignty. In Judge Van Tatenhove's order doing so, he concluded that the federal government had unduly influenced the state's power to set their own tax policies and had therefore overstepped its bounds. And speaking of overstepping its bounds, in September, President Biden doubled down on his my way or the highway approach, announcing a forthcoming rule that will require businesses with 100 or more employees to make COVID-19 vaccination a condition of employment. David Rivkin, in a recent Wall Street Journal article, referred to this mandate as lawless. and I could not agree more. Now, I've read my copy of the Constitution. I've read it many times. Nowhere in that document does it provide the federal government with the authority to mandate vaccines. I do not believe that the Biden administration can place itself in the position of taking over a state's police power, or that it can issue an emergency regulation that is simultaneously overly broad and too narrow. Ultimately, federal judges or the justices will make that determination, but I and several of my colleagues will be a part of that discussion. So where does that all leave us at this juncture? Over the last year and a half, we've weathered difficult questions pertaining to the rule of law in Kentucky and in this country. But American history is replete with such inflection points, replete with circumstances that test where, on the scales of justice, the balance between liberty and public safety ought to exist. Each time, in my view, we have come out the other side with a clearer understanding of the contours of our founding documents. And regardless of the error or the circumstance, attorneys general should be an active participant in these debates, vigorously defending the interests of their respective states and the rights of their citizens. And I humbly ask for your continued help in this effort. As Robert Kennedy once remarked, the glory of justice and the majesty of law, created not just by the Constitution, nor by the courts, nor by the officers of the law, nor by the lawyers, but by the men and women who constitute our society, who are the protectors of the law as they are themselves protected by the law. Each of you and the federal society as a whole is a guardian at the gate protecting the rule of law. The conversations you start, the debates you host, the ideas you foster are critical components of our free society. My charge to you is to live what we discuss, practice what we debate, so that each day our republic grows closer to that more perfect union envisioned by our Constitution. Thank you for your time. Thank you for volunteering your energy and talents to organizations like this one. And may God bless each of you in your endeavors. Thank you so much.